So students, we have just discussed the three returns to scale and we pick up one out of them, constant returns to scale, which is popularly well known as Cobb-Douglas production function. Cobb-Douglas production function is a linear homogeneous production function implying constant returns to scale, which is given by this equation. Q is equal to A multiplied by L alpha into K 1 minus alpha. You have to know this equation very well. Cobb-Douglas production function is mathematically written as Q, that is output. A is a constant number. Labor, alpha. Alpha is a fractional value and capital 1 minus alpha is again a fractional value. This production function assumes that elasticity of substitution will always be equal to 1. It tries to explain that if one of the input is 0, the output will also become 0. The only problem with this equation is that it is only focusing on two factors of production. One capital and the other is labor. It's very important for you to remember that here when we take K, capital, it is subject to depreciation. And we say that it can be measured how much capital gets depreciated. And when we talk of labor, we assume that labor are all alike. It is easy for the managers to substitute labor. Cobb-Douglas production function is based on a mathematical relationship between labor and capital that can be used to understand how much will be the effect on output. He says that at any given time, when labor and capital both are used, we should know what is that alpha value, and accordingly we can predict by how much the output will change. I'll explain this with a very simple sum on the board so that you understand how this equation is used. As you can see here, I have written down the Cobb-Douglas production function. Q is equal to A into labor alpha into K, capital 1 minus alpha. I have assumed labor alpha value as 0.60, capital as 0.40. It means 1 minus alpha means at any given time, whatever is the value of labor, the index, whatever is the index value of labor, the alpha should always be 1 minus that. So 1 minus 60 will give me 0.40, or 1 minus 0.40 will give me 0.60. This is what that alpha values represent. So when from 1 we minus 0.40, we automatically get L. That means if I know the value of 1, I will automatically know what is the value for K. That is, this is the base and this is the index. I will know what is the index value of K if I know L index value. Similarly, if I know the index value of K, I will know the index value of labor. Second thing what it represents is, if it is 0.60, the index value of labor, that means a 1% change in labor will result in 0.60% change in output. Similarly, a 1% change in capital will bring 0.40% change in output. So that power indicates by how much proportion the output will change. Based on this, A is a constant value. This will keep fluctuating and accordingly it will have an impact on the total volume of output. But at any given time, what Cobb-Douglas tries to prove is that a change in capital and labor will bring an equal amount of change in output. So, a 1% change in input should bring a 1% change in output only. Here one I'm taking in terms of just equal change. So if there is a 30% change in input, there will be 30% only change in output. Cobb-Douglas production function is fully based on assumptions where only two factors are taken, machine and manpower, and it is basically relevant for manufacturing industries. Students, till now we had discussed the production function with one variable input and all variable inputs. Now we will take up a concept where we have production function with two variable inputs, and that takes us to the isoquant or equal product curve concept. Let's first understand what is an isoquant. Isoquant means equal quantity, same amount of output. It is a diagram. Isoquant is a diagram which is prepared from the points, joining the points, that shows different combination of factor inputs which give the same quantity of output. In other words, when I am altering the proportion of labor and capital but the output does not get affected, then we come across isoquant. So isoquant is a situation in which the company wants to make certain changes with its factor proportions without affecting the output. Output should neither increase, output should neither decrease. Then we say they are facing a situation of isoquant. This is how an isoquant graph will look like your demand graph, downward sloping. But the only difference is, unlike the demand graph, here on the x-axis we measure one factor, let's say labor, and on the y-axis we measure another factor, capital. Now just see that if I am reducing the capital, the machine, from 25 to 20, 20 to 15, I am increasing labor from 1 to 2, 2 to 3. You can take any factor, whichever you require. You can even discuss it in this way, that if this is counted as labor, because machines are labor substituting. So it will be very practically easy for us to say five workers are less and one machine is more. So if you plot the number of machines as your factor Y, you can take factor X as the labor units. So when we are decreasing the labor units from 20 to 15, 15 to 10, we are increasing the machines. So they are both substituted with each other, and that gives you the downward sloping isoquant. You can see at the side we have mentioned 20Q. This means that whether I use 5 machines less and 1 labor more, or I use 1 machine more and 5 labor less, whatever way, the output will not get affected. Output will remain constant. This is what isoquant means. Let's understand what is an iso product map, an isoquant map. An iso product map or isoquant map consists of a set of isoquants. As you see in this given diagram, students, there are 3 isoquants. The lowest isoquant, that is the one which is very nearest to the origin, represents 15Q, that is 15 units of output. Higher one represents higher quantity. The concept is very simple. Higher the isoquant map, higher the output. So, the isoquant maps are parallelly lying on top of each other, representing more and more units of output. Here you have to be very clear that a producer cannot increase output by internally changing the inputs. If he wants more output, he has to go on a higher isoquant. And to reach the higher isoquant, he has to increase the factors that are used. So, the concept of isoquant is just one. First, The producer can internally change the factors keeping the output constant. So he will rely on only one isoquant, the same isoquant. But what if he wants higher output? For that, he must move from a lower isoquant to the higher isoquant by increasing the factors or the combination of both the factors. Now we go to a concept called MRTS, marginal rate of technical substitution. This concept is applied to only one isoquant, single isoquant. We are not going to refer here the isoquant map which we just discussed. We are going back to isoquant. If I take you back, this is what an isoquant map, an isoquant is. Here you have only one isoquant graph. It represents that when I am changing one factor, I have to change the other factor to lie on the same isoquant graph. This concept is MRTS. Now what is MRTS? Different combination of factors which result in same output. So we have to know that how many factor of Y are substituted by addition of one unit of factor X. If I take you back here, you see that from 1, if I move to 2, I'm just taking a random guess. From 1, I'm increasing factor Y to 2. So I have increased 1 of factor Y. To increase 1 of factor Y from 25, let's say I come down to 21. So I have reduced 4 units of factor X. I have reduced 4 units of factor X for increasing 1 unit of factor Y. 4 units of factor X are brought down to increase 1 unit of factor Y. So the ratio becomes 4:1. That means to increase 1 unit of factor Y, I have to decrease 4 units of factor X. This is what MRTS talks about. It's very important for the production managers to always calculate the marginal rate of technical substitution whenever they want to make any changes in factor proportion. This is what the formula is, delta Y upon delta X. It tells us that we cannot continuously go on decreasing one factor for the sake of increasing the other factor, because MRTS goes on decreasing and it gives rise to the principle of diminishing marginal rate of technical substitution. In fact, when you are decreasing one factor and increasing the other factor, you will get downward sloping isoquant graph. To understand this further, we will take you now to the properties of isoquant. This gives you a very clear idea of what isoquants are, apart from only the definition that isoquant is equal quantity resulting from alternative combination of inputs. The very first property, isoquants must always slope downwards from left to right. What does it mean left to right? It means that when I am increasing one factor, I have to decrease the other factor. Only then the isoquant will slope downwards from left to right. It means that more and more units of X as well as Y would yield more and not same output, which is the requirement of isoquant. What does the isoquant say? That when we want same output, if we are increasing one factor, we have to decrease the other factor. The second property. Isoquant curve must be convex to the point of origin. This means that isoquant curve cannot be concave. It has to be convex. The meaning of this convex is based on the principle of diminishing marginal rate of technical substitution, which I just discussed. You will find that initially you are ready to sacrifice more and more of one factor for gaining another factor. But as we start sacrificing more and more of one thing, we start realizing its importance. You know, when you sacrifice more, I'll give you a very simple example. Example of money. Most of the people don't like to carry too much of smaller denomination currencies, like lot of 2 rupees and 5 rupees coins, or lot of 10 rupees, smaller denomination. So many a times you will find, even if you are traveling by a public transport like a bus, you can, if you want change, you give it to the conductor and say that you want a smaller denomination change. He is very happy to part away with that plenty of smaller denomination money for a larger denomination currency. If we go on, if he keeps on giving away smaller denomination currencies for the sake of getting larger denomination, a point comes where he will realize the scarcity of that smaller denomination currencies. He may not have smaller denomination currencies to give it in exchange to the passengers who are traveling further. So he will always keep in store a minimum amount of smaller denomination currencies for exchange. Therefore, this is what the concept is. It will be convex because initially the manager will be ready to sacrifice more of the factor which is plenty in order to get more of the factor which is less. But it will not be at an increasing rate. Like if I take, like we had discussed just now, MRTS 4:1. Next time it will be 3:1, 2:1. Matlab sacrificing less and less of one factor for gaining more and more of the other factor. So isoquant curve must be convex to the point of origin. The third property is no two isoquant should intersect. What does this mean? It means that if the two isoquants intersect, let's say one isoquant represents 15 units output and the other isoquant represents 20 units of output. If both 15 units and 20 units isoquant are intersecting, that means there is a combination of machine and manpower which is in a position of giving you 15 units output also and 20 units output also. Matlab a combination giving you less work also and more work also. Now this is practically very unreal. No company will hire workers and keep machines which will work less than their capacity, 15 units, and then more than their capacity. It's not possible, because if you want more output, then you have to put in more hours of work. That means you are not giving full efficiency in the work. So what happens is, we can never have a situation of isoquants intersecting each other. Taking you back to this slide, this diagram, isoquants should always be parallelly arranged. It should never cross and intersect each other. So when you look at this slide, you will look at carefully, you will see that the first represents 15, second represents 20. What we are discussing now is that 15 and 20 will intersect each other. Matlab, there is a combination of factor Y and factor X which can give you less also and at the same time more unit also. This is practically not possible. So therefore, we conclude that no two isoquants should intersect. Given these properties, we have to decide producer's equilibrium. Now the producer has to finally decide a combination of factor X and factor Y which will give him maximum output. You know what is the strategy of the producer? He wants to reach the highest isoquant because it represents highest amount of output. But since resources are not free, there is a cost involved, and that takes us to iso cost. What is an iso cost? An isocost is a linear line called as the budget line, which gives us an idea of the prices of both factors, how much has to be paid to the labor and to the capital units, and how much is the budget that the company has. It is like a triangle, and this triangle is the amount of budget which the company has. Now, what the producer needs is, the producer wants that the budget line should be the minimum, and he wants to reach the highest isoquant. We have to superimpose the isoquant map on the isocost line so that the minimum budget, the producer tries to reach the maximum output. Look at this diagram. When you look at this diagram, you have this budget line. The budget line is fixed, and all the isoquants are lying below the budget line. Matlab, they are all the isoquants which are below the budget. The producer's goal will be to reach the highest isoquant in the least budget. We'll understand this with one diagram. Look at this diagram. On x-axis, I have plotted labor, L. On y-axis, I have plotted K, capital. AB is the budget line. This budget line has to be mathematically calculated. This budget line is totally based on how much money will be spent on hiring labor units, that is the price of labor, and how much money has to be spent on hiring machines or purchasing machines, that is the cost of capital. So we say prices of factors and the budget that the company has on spending over the factors gives us the budget line. So the budget line, that is isocost, is determined by prices of factors and at the same time the budget that the company has. It is basically the cost line, therefore it is called as isocost. We call it isocost because we don't want the cost line to shift up. So the budget is fixed. Now we are superimposing the isoquants. What are isoquants? Combination of capital and labor giving same quantity of output. I have written here 10, 15, 20. 10 is lying inside the triangle, so it is within the budget. 15 units. Again, it is lying within the triangle, so it is within the budget. Both of them are lower volume of output, and therefore the producer will look for the isoquant which is the highest. I have assumed as 20, and it is tangent to the isocost line. So where the isocost line and the isoquant are tangent, it is called as producer's equilibrium. So producer's equilibrium is a point where the isocost and the isoquant has to be tangent. It also means optimum combination of inputs. It is also called as least cost combination. So when we talk of least cost combination, in the minimum budget, that is the constant isocost line, the producer tries to reach the maximum output. So minimum cost, maximum output. Minimum budget and the highest isoquant will provide us with producer's equilibrium. So students, as I had just shown on that board how a producer meets the equilibrium point, let us conclude that a producer can always move from one equilibrium point to another in the same manner, which will take him to the output expansion path. It is the producer's equilibrium where we find point E, which allows the producer to make the best use of his outlay of funds. He tries to make it's like in the minimum quotation getting maximum work done. So company, when it wants to give an order, it is always looking for maximum work which can be done in the least cost. If the producer can increase his outlay, that is shifting of the budget line. This point E will shift to higher isoquant E1. That means from one equilibrium, when you move to higher equilibrium, we say that it is the output expansion path on the scale line. And this is the least cost way of producing each level of output. It basically explains us that every time when the company is moving from one scale line, that is least input output combination, that is in the minimum cost maximum output, it is moving from one equilibrium to another, and this is how the companies grow and expand. Now we finally come to the conclusion that how is it that companies experience increasing returns and sometimes decreasing returns. This takes us to a very theoretical concept called as economies and diseconomies of scale. Now, in the production process, the business firms enjoy certain advantages and disadvantages. These advantages are called as economies of scale, and disadvantages are called as diseconomies of scale. This is basically due to the scale of operation. We are here talking about long run. When a company grows from small scale to large scale, it experiences lot of fluctuations. The advantages or disadvantages can be internal within the plant or external lying outside the plant. We will first discuss internal economies. They are advantages which a firm enjoys from within itself. And I would like to connect this with cost, that whenever there are internal economies of scale, it will first bring increasing returns, and at the same time it will bring down the cost. If you remember, in our previous session we had discussed on cost chapter, and there we have discussed about the downward sloping cost. So the reason why cost goes down is because of economies of scale. The internal economies are divided into various categories: technical, managerial, commercial, financial, and risk bearing. We begin with technical economies. Technical economies are basically dealing with machinery, changing the tools and equipments. It can be in the following forms. Whenever companies introduce division and specialization of labor, whenever they bring specialized machinery, whenever lot of money is invested in research and training, all type of integration of processes, this results in technical economies. So technical economies are when the companies introduced in the factory a integration of processes, and automatically production keeps improving. Like you have seen in cold drink manufacturing companies, the production begins and from one stage it starts moving to the next. The bottles get filled and automatically they get sealed and they go into the packets. So this is an example of technical economies. It is time saving and also money saving. Managerial economies. This is purely related with experts, where a company has a team of managers, the senior executives followed with junior executives, and still further the staff, where the work, there's a hierarchy between the junior and senior executives. Division of each department works independently and still they coordinate the activities. Commercial economies. This is purely dealing with greater quantity of goods which can be sold at a little extra cost, bulk purchase of raw material, better advertising, having an expert sales and department. Financial economies. purely dealing with rate of interest, getting credit at a lower rate of interest because the company has large scale of operation. So they are always in a better position to bargain and negotiate. Risk-bearing economies, purely dealing with how the companies are in a position to handle risk in the business. Here it is possible for the companies to find out the markets where they can deliver the products in a faster and a less time, and of course in a lower cost. But apart from internal economies, there are certain problems which the companies faces. They are called as internal diseconomies. Whenever internal diseconomies come in various forms, it will generate decreasing returns to scale. Output will increase, but in a lower proportion. The rate of increase in input will be greater than the rate of increase in output. The very first is efficiency to inefficiency. When does efficiency turn into inefficiencies? It's when the output crosses the optimum level, there is mismanagement or there is lack of supervision, that efficient works within no time starts becoming inefficient. Administrative difficulties start cropping in, like we have in case of airlines and in that Maruti plant, where there was huge chaos about the workers and management, which led to internal diseconomies, industrial unrest, high cost of reconversion. In Maruti Suzuki, that is the Manesar plant, it is not possible for the managers to close down the plant because it involved huge cost of reconversion. Therefore, they decided a temporary shutdown of the plant, and now they have reopened the plant after terminating some of the employees. So this is where you have internal, you can say, diseconomies, which result in high cost and decreasing returns. There are also increasing risk which the companies faces with time. That is lot of interruptions, standing cost, inventory which gets locked up, and trained workers when they start leaving, no company can stop their workers from quitting the job. So this brings in some type of risk. Increasing cost, where the output goes beyond the optimum level and the cost starts rising. As we have just discussed, the internal economies and diseconomies, they are all dealt within the plant. They are arised due to certain decisions made within the plant. In fact, whatever problems the company faces are sometimes from within the company only. But what if the problems come from outside? What if the benefits automatically start pouring into the company? Then that takes us to external economies and diseconomies. Let us look at these economies and diseconomies. External economies are advantages which come indirectly and externally from the growth, not in the size of the firm, but in the size of the industry as whole. That means when the business as whole keeps growing, automatically the business firms start gaining the benefits. We have economies of concentration, where many firms are located in one region, labor is available, common services are found in plenty, and training, research, ancillary centers are located. So automatically the benefits go within the plant. This happens in case of everything brought under one roof, in case of shopping malls. Automatically when people come, there are certain stores who automatically start getting the customers. Ahmedabad, where you have the Indian Institute of Management, the industries automatically start getting well-trained management students who are ready to work for the company. So these are all external economies called as economies of concentration. Then you have economies of information, where you have workers doing the same type of job coming together to share their experience and knowledge. Different departments coming together, or a common canteen coming together, sharing their experiences, and automatically the benefits company starts getting, because their workers get an automatic information from other workers working in other plant, and they try to adapt those practices which will benefit them as well as the company. But at the same time, there are also problems which crop in and which affect the performance of the business firm, called as external diseconomies. This is excessive concentration or localization of industries, bringing lot of traffic problems, lot of problems with respect to cost. Diseconomies of concentration are reflected in excessive pressure on transport, that is infrastructure bottlenecks, high cost of scarce land, property prices increasing. So if the company wants to make an investment in a nearby plant or a nearby land area, it becomes very difficult because of the rising cost. Shortage of skilled labor, militant labor unions, scarcity of power and raw materials. In fact, sometimes the area becomes too overcrowded, like you have the Siebes area in Andheri in Mumbai. It is one of the examples of external diseconomies, because a lot of factory plants have cropped in, and that has resulted in high pollution. So this was what we have discussed about production, and the last part of this chapter was purely based on the internal and external economies and diseconomies. So with that, we have completed this chapter, and all the best.